is this what it's like to be an Android user? It's just like, it feels like using Windows Phone back in the day. I don't have any of the apps.
Yeah, that is really crushing. I know how excited you were, but it's got the camera.
Hi, welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
We're coming to you from our newsroom in Seattle, where we get to report each day on what's happening all around us in tech, science, and innovation. This week on the show, we're going to talk about some of the biggest and most interesting stories we've been covering over the past week, not only here in Seattle, but in Las Vegas, of course.
Of course, our other market.
It seems like it sometimes in the tech industry. Why do they always hold all their events in Las Vegas? At any rate, coming up this week, we will talk about Amazon slamming Microsoft in the cloud. 60 Minutes, what it missed in its report about technology and the homelessness crisis in Seattle. And Craigslist, they've finally got their own mobile app, and you and I cannot use it, Monica. So we're going to talk about that coming up later on. And the answer to our Name That Tech Tune Challenge.
I can't wait to find out.
That's right. All right. So let's jump in first with Amazon and Microsoft. This has always been a really interesting dynamic between these two companies. They're the two big tech giants, homegrown in Seattle. And over the years, they've gone through different stages of competition and partnership. And it's fascinating to see what's happening in the cloud between these two companies right now.
Yeah, they definitely seem more like enemies than frenemies these days.
They really do. And I got to see that this past week in Las Vegas at the Amazon Web Services reInvent conference, which is Amazon's annual cloud computing conference. All sorts of interesting nitty-gritty technical announcements that they made, and you can read about those in our coverage, which I'll link to from the show notes. But the trend that really stood out to me was Amazon going directly after Microsoft. Andy Jassy, the Amazon Web Services CEO, explicitly called out Microsoft during his keynote address and criticized Microsoft for its licensing practices, where they've gotten much more restrictive on the ways that Windows and SQL Server can be deployed in the cloud.
You see this return to the ways of old from Microsoft, where they're not prioritizing what matters to you guys and to customers. So let me give you an example. For many years, you were able to take the SQL Server licenses that you'd bought yourself and then bring your own license and run where you wanted to, in our relational database service as an example. One day, Microsoft decided that they didn't want to let you do that. Was it good for you? Hell no. Is it good for Microsoft? Maybe. I think they think so. But people are sick and tired of being pawns in this game.
It was against this backdrop of this slide that said closing Windows, closing Windows. And so it was like
sassy.
Yeah, very sassy. And it was really a surprise in the midst of all this technical information that Amazon was trying to get across. One of the most interesting things that Andy Jassy said was that Amazon sees its addressable market not as the 3% of enterprise IT spending that is the cloud market today, but as the 97% that is currently in traditional corporate servers, in traditional data centers that Amazon sees eventually migrating to the cloud. And that 97% is essentially much of Microsoft's core business right now.
It's also interesting because some of this stuff is really, you know, it's in the weeds for somebody like me who doesn't follow cloud computing that closely. But it really gets to some of these bigger issues that Amazon's dealing with in terms of its antitrust scrutiny. And this is something that you pointed out this week in your coverage and I thought was so fascinating because from a competitive point of view, Amazon wants to come off as really ambitious and going after 97% of the market. But if I'm a regulator looking at this company that I think might have some monopolistic practices or is, behaving unfairly in the marketplace, and I see them going after a 97% market share, then that's something that I'm really going to look at.
And it has parallels to Amazon's e-commerce market share, where Amazon will sit there and say, oh, yes, we do have a very large share, 37-38% of e-commerce. But in fact, we see our addressable market not as e-commerce, but as retail overall, including physical retail stores. There's a direct comparison there, a parallel to what Andy Jassy was saying in that Amazon Web Services sees its addressable market as the $3.7 trillion enterprise IT market, not just the narrow slice that's currently the cloud. And that comes up in the antitrust investigation because if you're talking about the $3.7 trillion market, Amazon Web Services doesn't have a dominant market position, which is to their benefit. And this came up this past week because Bloomberg News reported that the FTC has expanded its antitrust inquiry into Amazon to include Amazon Web Services and potentially how AWS treats third-party software vendors that use its platform.
Right. It kind of seems like no business area for Amazon is safe right now from regulatory scrutiny.
The other backdrop for these comments this past week by Amazon was the Jedi contract.
Can we get the Star Wars theme song playing every time we talk about Jedi?
Exactly, exactly. This is the Return of the Jedi for the third or fourth time here on the podcast.
Right. So for those who don't know the backstory of Jedi, it's this $10 billion, 10-year contract to build out the Pentagon's, what's referred to as its war cloud, to really develop a robust cloud infrastructure for the military. And Microsoft won the contract last month. It was a big surprise upset because Amazon was really long seen as the front runner. Amazon has filed a protest to challenge the decision to award Microsoft with this contract.
So Amazon did not directly address Jedi during their keynote, but we had an opportunity during a press conference to submit questions in advance for Andy Jassy, which was in and of itself probably worth commenting on. Usually at a press conference, they will open it up and you'll field questions. And in fact, they did end up doing that. It was really weird. But they said in advance, hey, we want you to submit questions. So our question, after we decided to play along, was the question that you came up with, Monica.
So what I wanted to know was, what's Amazon's end game here? What are they hoping to get out of this protest? And we asked that to Andy, and he didn't really address it. But then some news later in the week kind of got to an answer.
That's right. There were some court filings that were unsealed in Amazon's official legal protest of Microsoft's victory in this $10 billion Jedi contract. And you can see how Amazon is looking at this and saying, wait a second, Microsoft is now a strong number two in the cloud market, and they're winning this big government contract. Amazon clearly feels like it has to make a statement here. So one of the ways that Andy Jassy addressed this question during the press conference was to say, hey, Amazon feels that its technology is superior to Microsoft, and it hears that from customers, and therefore it looks at the Jedi award process and says, wait, there must be bias here.
And there has been some evidence to support that theory. You know, President Trump a couple months ago started talking about Jedi, and he is no friend of Amazon's. He's been very, very critical of the company since he was campaigning for president and during his first term. And a couple months ago, he ordered the Defense Department to do a review of the bidding process, saying he didn't think it was competitively bid because Amazon was the front runner. And there were criticisms from Amazon competitors who said this was tailor-made for this company. So that was kind of the last we heard, and until Microsoft got it. And the optics there could at least lend weight to the theory that President Trump's public comments and political pressure influenced the decision. And that's the case that Amazon is really making here.
And your question for Andy Jassy that we submitted was, what is he hoping to accomplish? What does AWS hope will be the outcome from this appeal? Because you got to look at it and say, like, are they hoping just to make a point here, or do they actually want to ultimately work with the DOD on this contract, even though they seem to be somewhat at odds with the people who are making the decision inside the Pentagon now?
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit of both. I think you're right that they do need to make a strong statement here. But at the same time, we saw in court filings this week that what they're actually asking the court to do is to block the Defense Department from moving forward with Microsoft and then reopen the bidding process to make sure that it's done in a fair way.
So what is at stake here for Amazon ultimately?
There's the reputational stakes, the idea that the number two cloud provider could beat them out for such a giant contract. And there's the contract itself, which is very lucrative. It's and very prestigious. You know, it's $10 billion over the next decade, this huge project to not only migrate the Defense Department's IT infrastructure to the cloud, but to enable them to use advanced computing techniques like artificial intelligence and machine learning in military operations. So I think it is a real feather in the cap of the company that wins the contract ultimately. And I think it is important for Amazon to say, if you were just looking at the merits of our offerings, then this is not the conclusion you'd come to.
Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, when we spoke with him about a month ago about this very contract, pointed to Microsoft's work in what's known as hybrid computing, the notion that one company can offer a platform that lets its customers run technologies both in the cloud, in the public cloud, but also on premises, so in their own servers or in something closer to their own operations. Amazon was sort of born in the cloud in terms of Amazon Web Services. This has not been a strength of theirs historically over the years, but it was interesting. One of the big announcements, actually a few of the big announcements at reInvent, were Amazon effectively stepping up its game in hybrid computing. They have a technology called AWS Outposts, which effectively brings its hardware, Amazon's hardware, to your location to let you run Amazon's cloud there on site. They also had something called Local Zones, which is going to bring cloud computing resources closer to major cities. So you can see where, both competitively and technologically, it's a bit of an arms race, ironically, between Amazon and Microsoft. And even as Amazon says that the Pentagon wasn't acting fairly in awarding this contract, they're also taking actions to show how they see this hybrid computing area as an important one to catch up in.
Right. I think that this challenge, this court case, and ultimately the JEDI award is going to become emblematic of the broader arms race in cloud computing that Microsoft and Amazon are really at the forefront of.
You can go to geekwire.com to check out all of our coverage of AWS reInvent, the Pentagon's JEDI contract, tons to absorb and tons to understand there. And as you said, it is really interesting and has broader implications for the long-term direction of that giant enterprise IT market. All right, we will be right back with a discussion of what 60 Minutes missed in its report about technology and Seattle's homelessness crisis.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/ITCertsIncluded.
Welcome back to GeekWire. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg. 60 Minutes. Whenever 60 Minutes comes to town, it's got to be interesting, right?
Absolutely.
And it was Anderson Cooper, no less. So you know that it's going to be an important story. You watched this, reported on it. It touched on a lot of issues that you've been covering over the past few years. Can you give us the thumbnail sketch of what 60 Minutes reported?
So Anderson Cooper, as you said, came to Seattle to report on the homelessness crisis here, which has been officially a state of emergency since 2015. He focused on the human stories largely. He spoke to a family of three and a mail carrier, a database engineer, folks who are homeless for different reasons, but really tried to show that the population of people living unsheltered is very diverse in Seattle. And this story is really emblematic of something that cities all up and down the West Coast are going through. There are these booming economies, affluent cities with a lot of wealth, but an inability to shelter people at the lower end of the income spectrum.
I was watching for mentions of Amazon in particular and other tech companies, and they touched on the role of the tech companies to an extent in terms of their overall impact on the economy and rising rents. And in some ways, it was positioned as either or in terms of the cause of the problems, where it's either drug addiction or rising real estate prices. It seemed to me that it was a bit of an oversimplification in that regard.
I think that that's a fair assessment. This is probably the most complex issue that cities like Seattle are dealing with. And there are a ton of root causes of homelessness. And it seems like in TV reports, you know, they're not working with a ton of time, but it does seem like they tend to oversimplify something that is incredibly complicated. That was the chief criticism of the Como News special, Seattle is Dying, that ran a few months ago that ignited a lot of buzz. And there isn't just one cause of homelessness, but one thing that we are definitely seeing is in cities with booming technology industries like Seattle and San Francisco, real estate prices have risen very, very quickly over a short period of time. And one of the top causes of homelessness that people cite who are living on the street is no longer being able to afford housing. So we have a pretty good understanding that there's at least a correlation between an influx of high-paid newcomers to a city, often drawn by tech jobs, rising salaries that do not rise across the board for everyone, real estate constraints, and that includes zoning and public policy decisions, and rising homeless populations.
Amazon and its founder Jeff Bezos have committed more than $300 million to help the homeless in Seattle and other parts of the country. Apple has pledged $2.5 billion in California. Private but Professor Dennis Culhane says private donations will only go so far.
You know, $1 billion sounds like a lot, but to solve the housing affordability gap, is about a $30 billion requirement. And that's every year.
Just for housing subsidies.
Just for housing subsidies.
So what was missing from this 60 Minutes report?
There was not a very thorough interrogation of the population growth that the tech industry has caused in Seattle and the political posturing of the tech industry, particularly Amazon in Seattle. The most flashy example is the head tax, which was a tax that the Seattle City Council passed and then got really strong opposition from the business community, and particularly Amazon, because they would have been on the hook for the biggest tax bill. And then the council ultimately repealed the tax a few weeks later, and it would have gone toward funding affordable housing and homeless services.
Whether or not you agree with that plan, I was stunned that it was not even mentioned in the 60 Minutes report. I mean, that seemed really a key point to make, because they did mention Amazon's donations to the homelessness crisis.
Right. Their philanthropy was covered, but their lobbying on this issue was not really covered. And that also includes the Seattle City Council elections that we just went through, where Amazon spent a record amount of money, more than $1.4 million, trying to elect a more business-friendly suite of candidates to the Seattle City Council after going through this big head tax battle with the current council.
Did it change the discussion at all based on what you saw, the 60 Minutes report? Did it add anything to it? Your example of the Como report earlier, I know that it was highly controversial, and I think it might have influenced the discussion somehow. I'm wondering if the 60 Minutes report did as well.
I think what the 60 Minutes report highlighted more than anything else is that this is not just a Seattle story, that it's a story with national resonance that we should be paying attention to, because I think the subtext was, if we can't solve this problem in a city like Seattle with so much money and so much expertise and so many brilliant people and a fairly like-minded electorate, to be honest, it's pretty far left. So if these things can't converge to solve the problem, then what does that say about homelessness everywhere?
I want to go back to something that I've said a couple times, but I want to repeat it because I think it's really important. I wish that the tech industry, the big tech companies, starting with Amazon, would take their cues from Google's 10%, 20% time, whatever it was, where they gave employees the opportunity to pursue projects that they themselves were interested in, whether or not it related to their jobs. Wouldn't it be amazing if the tech industry as a whole in Seattle and the Bay Area could create a similar approach across these companies to address philanthropic issues, agreeing on a set of social problems, challenges that the tech industry should go after using those resources?
I'm going to have to push back on that
really?
A little bit.
Why not?
Well, it's not really why not, but it's not enough, is what I would say based on the research, because there are a lot of philanthropic programs that these companies are running. Amazon has donated millions of dollars. Microsoft launched a $500 million initiative. In many cases, they do have programs to encourage their employees to volunteer. But I don't think we can rely on the private sector to solve this problem. And I don't think that we should, because the private sector ultimately is at the whims of private citizens, not elected officials. And this problem is going to take the resources, I believe, of the government. You know, there was a McKinsey report that came out that said to address the homelessness crisis in the Seattle region, it would require $400 million a year. It's very expensive, and I think whatever system we put in place to address it should be at the accountability and response of the people and not at the whims of a private company.
And I recognize this gets into these larger issues of the power of these companies. We talked about this a lot in the context of international issues, where some of these companies are taking on the characteristics of governments, especially on the world stage. And I can see where you might have the same issues on the local level. That said, okay, fine. We the people should not depend on the tech companies to do this. Yet I contend that the tech industry, just looking at it from the tech industry's perspective, has an obligation to do something that matches the level of innovation that they bring to their products every day.
I think that's fair. And if that were to occur simultaneously with an ongoing revenue source and public solution, then I think that there's nothing wrong with that. But the private sector stepping in to fill a vacuum left by the public sector, I think, is a little problematic.
Nicholsburg Bishop 2020, I will be your running mate if you will lead the ticket, Monica.
You want me to lead the ticket?
Yes. Why? Are you kidding me? Yes.
I don't think
course.
I'll be old enough.
What's the threshold? 35?
Yeah.
That's stupid. You are the demonstration of the fact that the age limit or the age minimum, the threshold, is wrong.
Guess who's the same age as me?
Who?
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
At any rate, when you get to that point, Monica, I am on board as your running mate if you'll have me.
I appreciate that support.
All right. Coming up next, something else we can agree on, Craigslist and its new mobile app. Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg. I was so excited, Monica, when I saw this news. Craigslist, after 25 years of existence, it launched in 1995, has finally come out with its own official mobile app. Have you ever tried to use one of the third-party Craigslist mobile apps? It is such a sea of just really bad stuff.
It's not the best. But using the web browser on your phone is also awful.
It's not good. And that actually opened the door to mobile-first, smartphone-native rivals, including OfferUp, which is a company, a startup based in Bellevue, one of the region's unicorns, companies valued at more than $1 billion based on their private financing details. But I was so happy when I saw this, that Craigslist is finally coming out with its own mobile app. And then I saw that it's only available for iPhone. Monica, I just switched to Android. Is this what it's like to be an Android user? It's just like, it feels like using Windows Phone back in the day. I don't have any of the apps.
Yeah, that is really crushing. I know how excited you were, but it's got the camera. Right.
So, all right. So Craigslist mobile app is out there. It's on the iOS App Store. Folks out there, if you get a chance to try it, tell us what we're missing. I do still have my iPhone, so I'll give it a shot. I broke the back glass on my Samsung Galaxy Note 10 Plus.
I didn't even know you could break the back.
You can, unfortunately. So it's usable, but I'm back to using a case. I'm seriously thinking about using my insurance on T-Mobile to go in and get something different. And I'm thinking, Monica, about the Google Pixel 4.
You cannot get the Pixel 4 before me.
Why not?
Because I've been talking about how I want it for months and I'll be so sad and so jealous.
That's okay.
Well, fine. Okay. You can get it if you let me borrow it to take photos at night, because I really want to test out whether the star photography feature is actually as good as it sounds.
It looks great on the commercials.
Yeah, it looks great when Annie Leibovitz shoots it, but you know, for the layman out there.
So it's either that or I don't want to go back to the iPhone. I made such a big deal on the podcast, on the site, about switching to Android. I feel like if I'm going to give up on the Galaxy Note 10, and I do love the inking capability. I really like that. But maybe I could do a Surface. I could try a Surface Pro or something like that.
Yeah, it just depends what your priorities are. I think the iPhone is a smoother experience overall. But like I always say, I'm just really in it for the camera. And I have yet to see a better smartphone camera than on the Pixel.
I will say as well, the Pixel 4 has a new recorder app that I was slacking. You know, it's interesting. Almost all of our reporters, almost everybody on the editorial side uses Android.
I know. So maybe we should all get Pixel 4 so we can have our interviews automatically transcribed.
Yes, this is what it was. So they've added live transcription to the recorder app on the Pixel 4. You can also load it through the APK or whatever it is on Android where you don't load it through the marketplace. But anyway, it literally transcribes what the person is saying as they're saying it along with recording it. This is like this college student's dream, the journalist's dream.
Game changer for reporters. I'm curious, besides us, if people are excited about this.
So funny you should say, going back to reInvent, the reason this was on my radar was I sat next to a couple of journalists from Europe. And I looked down at what they were doing. So he had his phone sitting next to him recording, and he was taking notes, listening, and he had the live transcription feature going. And that's what made me start researching it. And I found it, you know, it had just been released. I talked to him a little bit afterward. He said, and I'm this way too, I learn by listening and seeing at the same time. And he said that his ability to remember, to recall the information later had improved significantly since he started doing that, which is key because, you know, you're in those press conferences, there's tons of distractions all over the place, but if you can sort of limit your attention to what's being said through your ears and then also visually, and this gets into my whole text-to-speech stuff, which I won't bore you with, but I think there's something here.
So all of the GeekWire reporters are getting a stipend for Pixel 4s for Christmas, right?
I'll get back to you on that.
All right.
All right. So before we end, I want to be sure to get back to our Name That TechToon Challenge. This was a feature that we used to do years ago on the GeekWire podcast. I brought it back on the last show. In case you missed it, this was the tune. And the answer is Half-Life. That is the
video game
theme song for Valve's Half-Life video game, which is in the news recently because Valve, the company behind the Steam video game platform, has just unveiled plans for a new version of Half-Life native to VR, to virtual reality.
Interesting.
It's one of the first-party games from Valve in quite some time, so people are excited about it. So lots of folks out there got the right answer. The person who was randomly selected from the pool of correct answers to win a GeekWire t-shirt was Paul Gideon.
Congrats, Paul.
And we will be back next week with a new Name That TechToon challenge with a new chance to win some kind of sweet GeekWire swag. What do you think? Water bottles?
The water bottles are nice.
They are very nice. I'll see if we have any left. So tune in next time for that. Until then, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.